The Trump arraignment. Why is this happening? We'll talk about that tonight. We have Josh Hammer. We have an FBI whistleblower. We have Jenny Cudd, a January 6th defendant, on tonight. We are packed with all kinds of stuff coming up on I'm Right. Remember, I'm not your mommy. It's not my job to powder your butt for you and tell you everything will be okay. I am America's daddy, so I'm about to tell you how it is. They're going to indict Donald Trump. Told you. Nobody who watches this show is surprised. So I told you last year this was coming. But why? Why did I see this coming? Why? Well, there are a bunch of whys, and we've talked about this a bunch on the show, so I'm not going to belabor the point. Okay, they're activist communists. The Democratic Party's been taken over by these people now. They don't hold back. They don't care about the Constitution. They care about crushing their enemies and rewarding their friends. Okay, but we got all that. You understand that. I understand that. On a day where the former president of the United States of America was arraigned, we don't need to discuss that. Let's discuss a bigger issue of why. Well, let's do a little analogy here. I'm sitting here doing TV for you right here on I'm Right, and grateful to be here, but I'm not home. So if someone breaks in my home right now and starts beating my wife, he's a bad guy, right? The bad guy. He is. He's a bad guy. He's a bad human being. Bad guy. But when the show ends, and I take out my earpiece, and I go drive home, and I get home, and I walk in, and the guy is still beating my wife. And he's still beating my wife. And he's still beating my wife. And I'm just walking around the house, say hi to the kids, pet the dog, maybe, hey, anything in the fridge for dinner? And I don't do anything to stop it. Well, now there are two bad guys. Now it's him and it's me. It's time to start asking a serious question. And a question I don't know if we're ready to start asking. Why do these people, Alvin Bragg, all of them, why do these people constantly operate with zero fear of Republicans returning the favor? Why is that? Have you asked yourself that question? Have you pondered that? Okay, I don't expect Alvin Bragg to not be a communist. He is what he is. He's a vicious little rabid animal communist. I get that. But why does Alvin Bragg have no fear of any Republican backlash at all? I'm talking about legal backlash. We just had the former president of the United States of America, someone who's been impeached twice that are for ridiculous reasons, arraigned for ridiculous reasons. We'll talk to Josh Hammer about that here in a few minutes. Why has not one Republican DA in the United States of America, not one, has brought a major Democrat in on charges? Not one. None? Why? Are we still under the impression that these people fear being called hypocrites? Thanks, Lindsey Graham.
This is the most irresponsible and dangerous decision by a prosecutor in the history of the country. He's opened up Pandora's box against the presidency itself. Hunter Biden and Joe Biden could be prosecuted under this theory if they were on vacation in South Carolina and made a call to China. This is a danger to the presidency. This is turning the rule of law upside down to destroy a man, Donald J. Trump, who the left fears. Do not let them get away with this. Vote. Show up at the ballot box, DonaldJTrump.com. Give the man some money so he can fight.
Go to DonaldJTrump.com and donate? Senator, they don't care about your donations to Donald Trump. They operate without fear and have been operating without fear now for years. We're not dealing with people who are going to be shamed by hypocrisy, who are going to be cowed into submission by online donations to donate to Trump 2024. These people either will fear being arrested in turn, whether the charges are trumped up or not, they will either fear being arrested or they will never stop. The communist only understands fear and pain because the communist is a religious zealot. The communist is not concerned with yet another politician or pundit going on TV and saying things like, Alvin Bragg doesn't prosecute murderers, but he prosecutes Trump. What a hypocrite. You think Alvin Bragg is going to go to sleep tonight after arraigning Donald Trump? And as he lays down, says, oh man, I hope no one calls me a hypocrite tomorrow. Gosh, if a couple more people call me a hypocrite, I'll drop the charges. I can't take it. No, Alvin Bragg doesn't care about your accusations of hypocrisy. Alvin Bragg is in this thing to win this thing. And Alvin Bragg is in this thing to win it all the way. All the Democrats are now, because they're all taken over by the communists in this country. And the communists are not going to back off. They're not going to be scared of being called hypocrites. They're not going to change any of their behavior at all until we join in on a mutually assured destruction pact. Our guy gets arrested on trumped up charges. Your guy gets arrested on trumped up charges. If you would like to stop that, because I don't want to live in a banana republic like that, and neither do you, if everyone would like to stop that, then we can stop that. But either we're all living under these rules or nobody is living under these rules. And as we speak right now, not one Republican DA in the United States of America has brought charges against a major Democrat. Not one. Not Hunter, not Joe, not Barack, not a Clinton, not Pelosi. Not one DA in America has announced it. Oh, don't get me wrong. They've all run to TV to complain about hypocrisy. Very hypocritical, guys. No charges. That may make you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Now, maybe you need to vent tonight. It's probably a good night for all of us to do some venting, right? I need to vent. You need to vent? Let's vent. Go practice with your weapon tonight. Go use your Mantis X. Ah, Jesse, I don't feel like going to the range. The range is closed. No, no, no. I get it. 90% of my practice now is with Mantis X, because as I get to know more and more of the best shooters in the world, I find out that's what they do. 90% of their practice is dry fire practice. What do the Green Berets use? The Green Berets use Mantis X. Or the Marines use. Marines use Mantis X. Mantis X is what the pros use. They dry fire practice in their home. They dry fire practice in their office. You don't spend money on ammo. You don't drive to the range. The whole family can do it and enjoy it together. It'll keep track of your score, and you'll become a better shooter quickly, right there in the comfort of your home. Go blow off some steam in a healthy way. Go to MantisX.com, all right? MantisX.com and get yours tonight. We'll be back.
Joining me now to talk about all of this is CNN Chief Law Enforcement and Intelligence Analyst John Miller and former federal prosecutor and senior legal analyst Ellie Honig. Are you guys sick of talking about this already? Wow. I mean, this is unprecedented.
This is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it is.
It's the Super Bowl. Joining me now, opinion editor of Newsweek and host of the Josh Hammer Show, my friend Josh Hammer. All right, everyone has a take today, Josh. Understandably, it's kind of one of those big things that you could say are probably a seminal moment in the country. What's yours?
Jesse, I'm not sure how much I could add, but look, this is a genuine, unprecedented crossing of the Rubicon. It is a point from which America will never return. There have been any number of prior presidents in United States history who have done any number of terrible things in their private life and their public life. Does the name Bill Clinton come to mind? I mean, think back to John F. Kennedy in the 1960s. His father was a bootlegger for the mafia during Prohibition. I mean, you can go back to the 19th century, the 1800s, if you want to as well. Any number of presidents have had checkered private and public lives, and yet, until today, no former president has actually been criminally indicted in a dog and pony show that benefits one half of the country, and they're cheering and applauding that they are on CNN. But this is a very, very, very dark moment for the United States. Look, the actual charges here, to call them legally frivolous, I think would be a dramatic understatement. I mean, and bear in mind also, Jesse, based on the falsification of business records, New York State misdemeanor, there's a 2-year statute of limitations built in. This thing would have expired in 2018. Then there's a federal campaign finance law violation, allegedly, that had a 5-year statute of limitations. It would have expired in 2021. So this is a bogus prosecution, to put it mildly. It is a pure, pure, pure political persecution, and it's total BS. We should not stand for it.
Okay, Josh, so it's all crap. I know that you know legal stuff a lot better than I do. It's past the statute of limitations. So that prompts somebody like me, as an uneducated person, to ask, how's this possible then?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I have actually asked some, you know, a number of like my friends from law school. I mean, this is not supposed to happen. Like this literally is not supposed to happen. But think about where this grand jury is. This is New York County, New York. This is Manhattan. The people there voted for Joe Biden over Donald Trump at an 85% to 90% clip or something like that. I think the specific precinct that the court is even higher than that. It was literally well over 95% of the votes went to Joe Biden there. So these people don't give a damn. They frankly just do not give a damn, from Alvin Bragg all the way down, arguably up to and including Eric Adams, the mayor, who was Alvin Bragg's superior. They don't give a damn about things like the statute of limitations. It's pure, pure Joseph Stalin, Jesse. Stalin famously said, show me the man, I will show you the crime. That's what Alvin Bragg is doing here, notwithstanding the fact that his own predecessor, Cy Vance Jr., who's a Democratic hack as well, looked at what's happened here and he decided not to prosecute it. But they don't give a damn about such legal niceties like a statute of limitations.
Okay, you have a few theories as the why in all this. What are they?
Well, I can only speculate, obviously, because it is so utterly, utterly ludicrous, legally speaking, politically speaking, socially, civilizationally. I mean, one thing that comes immediately to mind is Alvin Bragg is doing this for Alvin Bragg. He probably will get a nice, shiny book deal out of this. He'll probably be all over CNN, MSNBC. Probably some stupid top 10 law school will give him a criminal law professor gig. He'll probably teach some seminar in criminal law for all the heroic justice that he has done. So he stands to gain here, no doubt about that whatsoever. It's possible, of course, that he has people whispering in his ear, Eric Adams. It would frankly not surprise me if all the way up to the federal Department of Justice. Obviously, that should not happen. There's a federal department, there's a state. They should not be talking to one another. But in a situation like this, it simply would not surprise me if you had anyone up to and including maybe even the attorney general or the head of the FBI or someone talking to Alvin Bragg to apply some pressure there. But, you know, Jesse, the other obvious thing here is that just like after the Mar-a-Lago raid last August, which was also another crossing of the Rubicon, a visceral, shocking moment in the country's history in its own right, just like that, this has an obvious rally around the flag effect for Donald Trump. He has shot up in the 2024 polls. He has been able to fundraise millions and millions of dollars off of this. And you obviously have to ask yourself whether this was part of why they're doing this all along. I mean, does the Capitol or regime, so to speak, from Merrick Garland all the way down to Alvin Bragg, are they not concluding that because they defeated Donald Trump in 2020, they would prefer to get Republicans to nominate him than to defeat him again? I don't think that's conspiratorial. I think it's a very fair question to ask, to be honest.
Okay, now let's deal with the actual legal process here, because it's a sham. It's a sham. We all know it's a sham. But and again, you're the legal mind. I am not. Doesn't this mean if he's being arraigned here that he is most likely going to be tried here? Is there going to be a trial? And are they going to pick a 12-man jury pool with Trump on trial for a felony out of a 90% Democrat district? Is Donald Trump going to prison, is what I'm asking?
He's not going to go to prison. I mean, I feel very confident in asserting that. This process is going to take time. It's going to be a slow thing. We're not going to have answers to these questions tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of cross motion filing from the attorneys here. Trump has spoken about trying to move the venue out of Manhattan to Staten Island, which is the only of the 5 boroughs in New York City that is anywhere even close to politically mixed. It's probably his only shot of getting a possible fair jury. You know, you could always get something like this possibly dismissed, whether it's on summary judgment or some other kind of legal criteria, which is basically a nice way of saying that there is no actual case here. frankly, I mean, based on what I remember from my law school days, Jesse, the statute of limitations should just answer that question, period. So again, I'm not sure what I'm missing there. I don't think I'm missing anything. So a reasonable judge really should just dismiss it out of the gate based on something as prosaic and straightforward as that. You obviously could potentially get a plea deal, but Trump's lawyers don't seem particularly inclined to take a plea, and Trump himself does not seem particularly inclined to get a plea. So if all of that fails, if there's no kind of moving of the venue to Staten Island or to some other outer borough, if it's not dismissed on summary judgment or some other grounds, and there's no plea deal, then yeah, at that point you could potentially get to a jury. And you know, worst case scenario for the president, some absolutely leftist, Stalin-esque nutjob jury in Manhattan finds him guilty on these trumped up, no pun intended, charges. Worst case scenario, he probably still prevails on appeal, but this could be going on a while. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if this were still kind of going on when we turn towards next year on the calendar and we gear up towards the Iowa caucuses, to be honest.
Okay, is this the last indictment he's going to face?
I don't know, but I mean, Alvin Bragg has been the first person now to indict, and he has set a precedent that others could easily follow. In a situation like this, Trump, of course, is under investigation in Georgia for his somewhat infamous phone call to the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, in the aftermath of the 2020 election. You know, we have this whole January 6th kangaroo court committee with Loopy Liz Cheney and all of that, and they've issued their recommendation for indictments to Merrick Garland and the DOJ. And then, of course, finally, you have the classified document retention scandal, which was the Mar-a-Lago raid. I don't think they will indict on the classified documents. If you know, the news cycle moves so fast these days, Jesse, but it was only fairly recently that Joe Biden had his own classified document trouble. So I would think they probably won't go down that rabbit hole. But when it comes to Georgia or January 6th, I mean, we could see some other indictments. I just want to clarify here, all of these for independent reasons are frivolous. None of these have actual legal merit. Then the January 6th stuff is utterly insane as well, only slightly less insane than what we're seeing here in Manhattan, in New York today. But yeah, I think it's eminently possible that once Alvin Bragg has set the precedent, that these other district attorneys and Merrick Garland, of course, with January 6th could definitely follow.
Josh Hammer, thank you, brother. Come back soon.
Anytime, Jesse.
Lots to unpack there, huh? Now, let's focus on something else. The FBI. Let's not forget we now have a secret police agency in this nation. And we have a former FBI agent, now whistleblower and a patriot, who's going to join us next and give us the skinny on many of those things. Before we get to that, I got a call to my radio show last night, and it was from the wife of a veteran. And it was hard because he's struggling. And it was kind of a how do I help, what do I do thing. The hardest part when you come back, one of the hardest parts, I should say, when you come back from combat, is that there's no help program. And your spouse doesn't know how to help you. They weren't there. Your parents, your sisters, your brother, they don't know how to help you. The VA doesn't know how to help you. Who can help these guys come back together, put themselves back together again so they can move on and live the lives we need them to live? We need these guys. Boulder Crest knows. Boulder Crest has a program called Operation Struggle. They find these veterans who are struggling to put themselves back together again, and they bring them back in real ways. Not, hey, here's a bottle of pills, have a good time. In real ways, putting people back together again. Don't we owe them that? I say we owe them that after 20 years of Iraq and Afghanistan. Help Boulder Crest help these guys. Go to bouldercrest.org, all right? Bouldercrest.org. We'll be back. Courage is hard to come by these days. Just, that's the way it goes when you get to late stage Republic era. And it's hard, very, very hard, to find somebody within a corrupted system willing to stand up to the corrupted system. That's real bravery. Steve Friend, very, very proud to know this guy. This guy's dedicated his life to serving this nation and was in the FBI and looked around in horror at what was happening within the walls of the FBI. And it's an honor to welcome him in the show now. He has a book out now called True Blue. He's also a senior fellow at the Center for Renewing America. I love that you landed on your feet, Steve. Appreciate you, brother.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Now, why'd you leave the FBI?
Well, it wasn't by choice of my own. They took my gun and badge and escorted me out of the building after a process where I came forward with my concerns about what was going on with the January 6th investigations.
Now, what was going on with the January 6th investigations that would prompt those concerns?
Well, my background with the FBI kind of is relevant to this because I came in 2014 and worked in a very remote location in the Midwest, worked on Indian reservations, and during that time had the opportunity to open up about 200 cases, arrested about 150 violent criminals. So I got really familiar with the FBI's rule book for carrying forward investigations. So when my family relocated to Florida in 2021, with the understanding I was going to be working child pornography investigations, and I was unceremoniously transferred over to work on January 6th cases, that was the first opportunity I had to look at those cases and became aware that the FBI is departing very greatly from its rules for the way that it's supposed to manage cases and index cases, and then also is employing some very aggressive tactics when it comes to apprehending some otherwise cooperative subjects.
Okay, so you were pulled from child pornography cases to go after these dangerous January Sixers, and you say the rules have changed. What were the rules? What are the rules now?
Well, in my entire experience, and for every other case that I've seen, when you open up a case, you own it, your office owns it. But when it came to January 6th, the cases, which should rightly be one case, opened up in Washington, D.C. A decision was made to open up a separate case for every single subject, and instead of running them on paper from Washington, disseminating them to the field. So now we've created this illusion that there are thousands of domestic terrorism cases that are spread around to Cleveland and Sacramento and El Paso, when in fact the numbers that are substantiating that are all generated from this one-time four-hour incident. And the reason for that is simply to juke the stats, to create this false impression that domestic terrorism is on the rise, as we've heard from our elected officials so often over the last few years. And then also, those numbers are tied to compensation for senior executives within the FBI. Meeting those metrics means that they get five-finger bonuses.
Five-finger bonuses at the FBI for busting people on the right. I guess I shouldn't speak out of turn. You were in the FBI. Are these domestic terrorism cases, are they focused at all on the left, or is this 100% going after Republicans?
Well, certainly everything related to January 6th, there's a conservative focus on that, as we've seen, as folks have been brought in and arrested and really had the book thrown at them for misdemeanor crimes in a lot of cases. Now, look, I'm not going to dispute that there are some individuals that conduct themselves in an abhorrent way. They should be tried for the crimes that they committed. And that was really what my concern was. I was not coming at it from a political angle. My concern was that since the FBI is not following its rules, we might wind up losing a trial for a righteous investigation, for a righteous prosecution. And I felt that we, as a matter of due process, should reveal that information to those defendants, because regardless of what you're accused of in this country, when you stand trial, you're entitled to mount a defense, and that includes exculpatory evidence. And the FBI has not made that information public, just like it's not made the surveillance tape from inside the Capitol public.
Steve, can you explain how the FBI got so broken? Is it just a few people at the top? Because I gotta be honest, man, I'm thrilled you came forward. I'm thrilled guys like Kyle came forward, but man, there aren't very many of you.
No, there's not. And I think there's a huge disconnection between the rank and file who are working in the field on cases and sort of keeping their heads down and then hoping that their number doesn't get called up, and management class, the folks that are in Washington, D.C. that are making these decisions. Those people tend to be very ambitious. They tend to be more politically to the left, because that whole process is sort of self-selecting. If you want to promote in the FBI, the idea is you got to come up with something new. And certainly if you're a conservative, you're looking for things to cut. Eliminate that waste. But as you climb those ladder rungs and they get slipperier and slipperier, you have to come up with new things, and you also have to attach yourself to large, important cases. And as we've been told, January 6th is now considered the most important investigation in the history of the Bureau, more important than September 11th, more important than the Civil War. And now the FBI and folks who want to rise through the management ranks are tempted to get their hooks into it and say that were in some sort of leadership capacity on this very, very important case.
Okay, that really concerns me even more than I already was, because that doesn't sound like we've got some bad actors in management. That sounds like there's a structural problem. And if there's a structural problem, how in the world can we fix that?
I don't think that it's redeemable at this point. I think the low T GOP, as you're prone to call them, needs to look at funding the FBI in the upcoming budget debates and debt limit ceiling debates. Funding the FBI is funding your enemy. It is no different than our U.S. military leaving behind war materiel, equipment, and weapons for the Taliban in Afghanistan. You do not provide aid and comfort to your political enemy. And in this case, the FBI has now elected to become a weaponized arm of the communist political left in America.
Ah, that is sad. Steve, I love you, brother. Go get him. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Jesse.
That's from the horse's mouth right there. Ah, Lee. All right. So what's it like being one of these January 6th defendants and having the entire United States of America and federal government after you, persecuting you for your political beliefs? That's what most of these people are being persecuted for. Let's talk to one of these people next, all right? Before we do that, let's talk about the fact that we don't give our dogs nutrition. We think we do, because we love our dogs. You love your dog. I'm not naive. I love my dog. But I didn't know that the dog food I was giving Fred didn't have any nutrition in it, didn't have anything in it, that it was all just dead. We went and got good dog food. We had a nice local pet store, and we even asked the lady in there, hey, we want good dog food, we want a healthy dog. And, oh, yeah, here it is. There's nothing in it. That's why it has a shelf life of 10,000 years. You need to give your dog rough greens. That's how your dog will get probiotics, vitamins, minerals. You have a lethargic dog or a hyperactive dog. Maybe your dog's getting older, sore joints. Maybe the eyes are going. Maybe your dog has digestive issues like mine did. Rough greens. Watch a difference in your dog when you start pouring this on your dog's food. It's all natural. It's a nutritional supplement. Your dog will love it. Watch the change in your dog when he gets actual nutrition. They have free bags right now. Free Jumpstart trial bags. All you pay for is the shipping. roughgreens.com/Jesse. Go get you a free bag, all right? roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
The actions we have taken thus far will not be our last. The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6th perpetrators at any level accountable under law.
Joining me now, Patriot, January 6th defendant, owner of Becky's Flowers, who never closed during COVID, and I freaking love that, Jenny Cudd. Jenny, are you a domestic terrorist? You don't look like one.
Hey, Patriot, I don't think I am a domestic terrorist, but the Department of Injustice certainly thinks so.
What's your background? How did you go from being an owner of a wonderful flower shop that I want people to patronize to being in the eyes of the federal government?
Well, I've been protesting my whole life since I was 5 years old when I went to my first political protest outside of the Planned Parenthood in Lubbock, Texas. And then I've always been very politically active, especially standing up for personal freedom and against government tyranny. So in 2020, when Governor Greg Abbott decided that a respiratory virus was so dangerous that my flower shop was not considered an essential business, even though I employ 7 women, I decided that I had had enough. And so I started organizing protests against the government, and I helped several other businesses that were deemed non-essential open up their businesses against Governor Abbott's orders. So then I wound up going So then I wound up going to Washington, D.C. pretty much 3 times in a row. I went for the 4th of July in 2020 because the Midland Chamber of Commerce again decided that a respiratory virus was so dangerous we couldn't celebrate Independence Day. And then I also went for the first Million MAGA March in November of 2020 after the stolen election. And then I went back on January 6th. And unfortunately, that the consequences of that continue to this day.
Now, what happened on January 6th?
So I went to hear President Trump talk and to, of course, fight for free and fair elections. And I wound up going inside the Capitol. I was inside for about 19 minutes, just wandering around in the rotunda and in Statuary Hall. You know, what I saw in the Capitol is so different from the same five clips that mainstream media keeps playing over and over. Because I saw families with small children pointing at the paintings and at the different statues and explaining the history of our country to them. And I saw Vietnam veterans, and I saw prayer circles and people singing the national anthem and chanting USA. And so I just wandered around with several other people. And then I was in the hallway above where Ashley Babbitt was murdered by Capitol Police Officer Lieutenant Michael Byrd. And people started coming out of that hallway with blood on their hands and saying that they killed a girl. And that's when I decided it was probably time for me to leave. And so I exited through an open door past police officers, just the way that I had come in through an open door past police officers. And then I went back to the hotel that I was staying at, and I sat down to record a Facebook Live video, which I had done every day since the election, thinking it would just go to the people that followed me on Facebook. And it was a 27-minute long Facebook Live video, and somebody took 1 minute out of that and put it up on Twitter. And in that 1 minute, what I said was, we broke down Nancy Pelosi's door, somebody stole her gavel, different things like that. And so the left thought, oh, look at this fool, she's admitting to her crimes. And so there were about 7 million views on that 1 minute clip on Twitter in about 2 or 3 days. And of course, I didn't do any of those things. I was referring to we as all of the people that were there. But I wound up being charged with initially just 2 misdemeanors. And 1 week later, the Midland Police Department showed up at my flower shop with 8 police officers, 7 vehicles. They were all in tactical gear, long arms, and 2 attack dogs. Now, I still think that that's a massive overreaction. And I have a meeting to talk with the chief of police here, who is a friend of mine, to see if that's standard protocol for issuing a federal arrest warrant. Because everybody in town knows that not only did I run for mayor of Midland in 2019, and thank God I didn't win that because I probably would have been impeached after January 6th, but I've also always been very involved in military and law enforcement causes. And so I was arrested, and the Midland Police Department took me to the FBI, where, of course, I invoked my rights because I'm not about to talk to those feds. And then the FBI took me over to the U.S. Marshals, who were actually wonderful, very professional, very kind. And they put me in a holding cell, which is just like every prison movie that you've ever seen. And they got me in front of a judge that day, who, of course, read my 2 misdemeanor charges at the time. About a week or two later, I found out that I had been indicted and upcharged. And so then I had 4 misdemeanor charges and a felony charge, which is the 1512 obstruction felony.
Good grief. Now, let's rewind for a moment. You say you walked by police officers to get into the Capitol. What did they say to you? Did they say you're not allowed? Did they try to stop you physically or verbally? What exactly did those police officers do as you walked by them into the Capitol building?
They didn't do anything. I walked through the West Terrace door, which had been opened by the police from the inside, and there is security camera footage of them motioning people in. And so far, there's only been 1 January 6th case that has been completely dismissed, because that guy proved that the police officers motioned him into that West Terrace door. And so his entire case was dismissed by the judge. So a couple people in front of going into the Capitol, the police officer said, "I don't agree with what you're doing, but I respect it."
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. Okay, where is your case right now? Because I know everyone's rooting for you. Where are? I'm glad to see you're not broadcasting from a federal prison somewhere. Where do you stand right now?
So I was very, very fortunate that I was able to hire Marina Medvin, who is a vicious constitutional lawyer out of Alexandria, Virginia. She's an amazing, amazing person. And so Marina worked with me, of course, over the last 2 years, and we wound up accepting a plea offer for Class A misdemeanor for trespassing, because she said that's probably what I would have been convicted of had I gone to trial. When I got that plea offer, it's very difficult as an American to say that you're guilty of something that you don't believe that you're guilty of. And I can tell you, I basically made an agreement with God that if I took that plea offer and got my part of January 6th over sooner, then I would use my voice to talk about what happened on January 6th and to speak out for the political prisoners and the people that aren't allowed to talk. And so that's what I've been doing ever since then, is traveling all over speaking about the January 6th political prisoners. So I do want to mention that I did have the most conservative judge, Judge Trevor McFadden, who is the only judge who has been remotely level-headed throughout any of the January 6th cases. And Judge McFadden wound up sentencing me last March to 2 months probation and a $5,000 fine. And he told me in court that the reason why he was giving me a $5,000 fine instead of a $1,000 fine is because my words hurt people. My words
hurt people. Jenny, where can people go? Is there a place people can go that is not a scam? It's not going to go to some politician. Is there a place people can go to support the political prisoners? We've been talking about them for 2 years on this show, trying to raise their voices, trying to raise awareness for these people, but I don't want people to give money to some scammer or some politician. Where can they give?
Absolutely. So I created a website last year, jennycudd.com, which is just my name, JennyCudd.com. I do not have any kind of fundraiser. I only ask that people contribute to the legitimate organizations. And those people are Patriot Mail Project, which is where you can write letters to the political prisoners. You can also write letters to people that aren't incarcerated right now. And those letters are more valuable than gold to those people, because it reminds the political prisoners that not all of America hates them, that we still support them and love them. And even if you just write, you know, a prayer or a note of encouragement, whatever it is, that helps so much. So that's patriotmailproject.com. And then there's also an organization that recently started, a nonprofit called American Patriot Relief. And that gives directly to January 6th defendants. There's several January 6th defendants that have fundraisers through GiveSendGo. And you can find those at stophate.com. And I link to all of these on my website, jennycudd.com. And so you can give directly to a political prisoner or to support their family members. Because if you think of it, regardless of if you agree with what we did when we stood up for our First Amendment rights and protested the government for a redress of our grievances, regardless of if you believe in that, there are January 6th defendants who have been incarcerated pre-trial for over 800 days now. Pre-trial. There is one man who has been incarcerated for 26 months who has never even gotten a bond hearing. And these men not only were the breadwinners in their family, but they also have wives and children at home. Children, some of whom they haven't even seen born, some of whom have graduated high school, have graduated Army boot camp, different things like that. And a lot of January 6th defendants lost their businesses, and their wives have been forced to sell their homes in hopes that they could hire a decent lawyer. And so there's countless ways that people can help. I mean, at the very least, pray that doesn't cost anything. It's the most powerful thing that we have. And there's one more organization I want to talk about, which is this, the American Gulag Chronicles. This is a book that is full of letters from the January 6th political prisoners. Two of these letters were written to my husband. And it's a very well done book. It has different illustrations in it, different ways that you can help the January 6th defendants. So I certainly hope that people will take their outrage and their anger at this, what I believe is the greatest miscarriage of justice that has ever happened in our country, and take their outrage and anger about what is happening with President Trump right now as well, and turn that into an action. Because it's easy for the left to be constantly offended and for the right to be constantly outraged. But the most important thing is that we do something that is actionable, that will help another human being.
Amen. Jenny, rooting for you. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Jesse. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. All right, we got to lighten the mood next. Hey, it's been a lot tonight. We need to lighten the mood, don't we? Now, before we get to lighten the mood, let me lighten your allergies. How's that? Look, it's allergy season, man. You walk outside and there's just this yellow cloud out there and everybody's eyes are itching and they're snotting. Mine aren't, are they? You see me every night. Mine aren't, are they? I've had allergies since I was 10. What am I on, some fancy new medication? Nope. I discovered, thanks to a friend, Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Just this little black box. It's an air purifier. I thought, okay, I'll try it. It's awfully small. Doesn't even make much noise. Surely this thing doesn't work. You can taste the difference in your air. It cleans all the viruses and mold out of your air. I don't even own over-the-counter allergy medication anymore. They have three packs of these things for sale for $200 off. Go to EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. Gets you a three-pack for under $200. It's friggin' good, right? EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back. The internet is full of hilarious people. There are just so many funny, talented people out there who put together videos and parody things. And I'm in awe of how clever and funny some people are. And my buddy Maze Moore is one of the best online. It just puts out great content. We'll show you a great Joe Biden video in a second. Before we get to that, hey, with all the chaos around you, indictments and protests, chaos around you, learn to take joy in the little things. Cup of coffee, man. Sit down with a cup of coffee in the quiet in the morning and just enjoy it. And get quality coffee. I've grown up on this. I used to not care. Now, ever since I've had Bone Frog coffee, I realized quality coffee is just better. Seattle's Best Coffee, you've heard of them? Yeah, one of their founders, he makes these Bone Frog blends. I don't just drink Bone Frog because it was founded by a SEAL and because proceeds go to various SEAL foundations. I drink it because it's the best cup of coffee I've ever had in my life. And I have a subscription now, so I don't have to worry about going to the grocery store or anything else. Subscriptions are 10% off. Go to bonefrogcoffee.com. Promo code is Jesse. That gets you 10% off the best cup of coffee you've ever had in your life, all right? All right, without further ado, here's my buddy Maze.
Where the hell are we? What are we doing?
Oh, See you tomorrow.